It's Wednesday, June 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hi, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the United States and China discuss contentious issues during annual talks. Much of the discussions here in Washington include economic issues.
This is something that Kim Jong-un should be staying awake at night thinking about, because he is going to be facing a determined team of professional investigators.
The United Nations will be taking a closer look at alleged human rights abuses in North Korea. Also ahead, music lovers converge on New Orleans for jazz and more. It's all on today's International Edition. The United States and China are engaging this week in their seventh strategic and economic dialogue. The cabinet-level discussions in Washington involve hundreds of diplomats from both countries, and they're being hosted by Secretary of State John Kerry and Treasury Secretary Jack Lew. John Kirby is a State Department spokesman.
We are looking to expand our bilateral cooperation on many global challenges such as climate change, development, humanitarian assistance, pandemic response, and ocean conservation. We'll also have the chance to coordinate U.S. and Chinese policies on regional issues like Iran, Iraq, and Syria, North Korea, and Afghanistan. And we will also address areas where we have ongoing differences, such as maritime disputes, cybersecurity, and human rights. As we have said many times, the United States is firmly committed to improving its relationship with China.
He says while the countries disagree on many points, including cybersecurity and maritime disputes, they recognize there are many areas for mutually beneficial cooperation. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins has been closely following the discussions. Pam, many issues are at the center of attention, including cybersecurity.
Absolutely. The U.S. and China are addressing some of the thorny issues, and one of them, of course, is cybersecurity. In his statement today, Vice President Joe Biden said there is an urgent need to agree on a rule-based system for rapidly evolving areas such as cyberspace and outer space. He didn't call China by name, but he commented on the heels of a massive U.S. government data breach that has affected millions of federal workers, and some believe China is linked to that hack. Biden said nations that use cyber technology as an economic weapon or profit from the theft of intellectual property are sacrificing tomorrow's gains for short-term gains today. Chinese State Councilor Yang Jiechi said that China believes that cybersecurity is very important. He said that China also believes that countries should work together to develop international codes of conduct for cyber information sharing.
Now, Pam, I understand there's also the need for physical security, and that stems from activities in the South China Sea.
Yes, it does. Secretary of State John Kerry said that the U.S. was going to use the dialogue in part to raise issues about regional security in the Asia-Pacific region, including the South China Sea. One of the issues that has been thorny between the two countries is that China has a land reclamation project in the South China Sea in areas that are claimed by other countries. Kerry said that he would work to address this issue with China, and he also said that he would address human rights concerns.
Cybersecurity and the South China Sea, of course, are some thorny issues between the two nations. What are some of the areas of cooperation that we're seeing?
One of the big areas of cooperation in today's talks has been climate change. China and the United States are already cooperating on a series of projects related to environmental protection, clean energy, and climate change. And today they announced six new eco-partnerships, as they call them, which are private sector projects between U.S. and Chinese companies. One of those deals with monitoring air pollution near chemical industrial parks, and another one deals with tracking sea turtle migration as part of an effort to help restore habitats.
It's always a bright day when we are able to speak with Pam Dawkins, who follows activities at the State Department for us. Pam, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Also following the China strategic and economic dialogue online and social media is Michael Lippin, who's here in the studio with us.
Hey, Jim. Yes.
Hi.
So, yeah, I can tell you that there are several ways that you can actually follow these talks on Twitter. A couple of key Twitter accounts that I think you should follow. Those mm-hmm. include the State Department's main Twitter account, at State Department, and that is at State DEPT. Then you have a couple of divisions within the State Department that have their own Twitter accounts, which are tweeting about the U.S.-China talks. Those include the U.S. Bureau of East Asian and Pacific Affairs, whose Twitter handle is at U.S. Asia Pacific, as well as the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and that department's account name is at ECA at State. Now, ECA at ECA at State is tweeting primarily about one particular part of the U.S.-China talks, and that's called the Consultation on People-to-People Exchange, or CPE.
Mm. Well, I know, Michael, you follow many of these accounts, as I do. A lot of interesting information out of there. What's been coming out of those Twitter accounts so far?
Well, here's a little taste of some of the tweets that I've seen from the U.S. At U.S. Asia Pacific account. Here's one tweet that came out a short time ago. It says, cooperation on climate change is a high priority in the U.S.-China relationship. We are working together to show leadership and take concrete actions. And here's a tweet from the at ECA at State account. It says, communication is critical for connecting the U.S. and China. Hashtag American English can help bring you together. And that tweet also has a link to a Facebook page called American English at State, and that is a U.S. State Department-run page containing information about American English language and culture. One other account that people can, of course, follow on Twitter is that of U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Mm-hmm. His account name is at John Kerry, and here's what he tweeted a few hours ago. Honored to take part in my third U.S.-China strategic and economic dialogue, an opportunity to discuss a broad range of important issues between our two countries. We also posted Pam Dawkins' web report about the U.S.-China talks on our main Voice of America Facebook page, and that's where one of our readers shared the article, along with an interesting comment about VOA's coverage. Jacques de la Guerre, who lives in the U.S. state of Colorado, said, while CNN worries about where Hillary Clinton will vacation and Fox News defends the stars and bars, that's another name for the Confederate flag, Voice of America is focused on whether we'll have a war with China. So Pam's story isn't exactly looking at the risks of a U.S.-China war, but VOA certainly has been pretty open in discussing the issues of tension between the two countries. Jen?
Indeed. And, of course, Secretary of State John Kerry, one of the hosts, along with Secretary of Treasury Liu. And, you know, we would perhaps say the old adage, go break a leg, but he already did that on his bicycle. So we just wish them the best of luck in the strategic talks this
exactly.
week. Exactly. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Follow Michael on Twitter at Michael_Lippin. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
You're listening to International Edition. The strategic and economic dialogue, by its very definition, has much to do with the economy, which International Edition's Alexis Christophorus covers for us in New York. Hello, Alexis.
Hi, Jim. Good to be with you.
My pleasure. Chinese and U.S. officials are kicking off 3 days of talks right here in Washington, but there is a cloud hanging over the annual dialogue. Alexis, why the cloud of mistrust, and what is expected to be discussed at these talks?
Well, Jim, China and the U.S. certainly have no shortage of things to talk about. Some of the hot topics expected to come up include the two nations' bilateral investment treaty that would offer equal treatment to companies in each country. Officials are also expected to discuss the Chinese yuan's possible inclusion in the International Monetary Fund's special currency benchmark. And, of course, climate control and diplomacy on North Korea are expected to be on the agenda. But actually, some fence mending may be just as much a focus. China is suspected of orchestrating a massive cyber attack on U.S. government computers, and China's building of man-made islands in the south of China Sea is also a point of contention. And both sides here really have an interest in reducing their tensions, especially ahead of the Chinese president's visit to the White House. That's going to happen in December, Jim.
Well, of course, we know about Google and its forays into China. It had a little bit of a bumpy road there, but now it looks like Google is the latest company to enter the crowded streaming music industry. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, well, you know, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, they're all competing to become the dominant streaming music service, but Google wants to make sure you haven't forgotten about its own music app. It's called Google Play Music, and so the company has announced it will be rolling out a free version of Google Play Music, and it won't let you pick specific songs like the paid version, but it will let you choose from a variety of what it's calling human-curated and very specific playlists. So think of this more like internet radio with dozens of DJs than a music on-demand service. And these playlists are created and curated by Google's team of music experts. But this is not a new concept. Apple's new streaming service also has a radio station called Beats One, and that features live DJs that broadcast music around the clock. But I guess in the end, Jim, we'll have to see if Google Play Music strikes the right chord with listeners.
Exciting to watch. Thank you so much. Never a shortage of business news from New York. Alexis Christophorus follows all of it for us. Alexis, thank you.
Thank you.
This is VOA's International Edition. The United Nations officially opened a new field office in Seoul Tuesday to document human rights abuses in North Korea. VOA's Brian Patton reports the world body has been trying to increase pressure on the repressive Kim Jong-un regime to end ongoing systematic human rights violations that it calls without parallel in the contemporary world.
Phil Robertson with the non-government group Human Rights Watch calls the opening of the UN's field office in Seoul a critical step forward in the campaign to hold North Korea's leaders accountable for committing crimes against humanity.
You know, this is something that Kim Jong-un should be staying awake at night thinking about, because he is going to be facing a determined team of professional investigators looking and speaking to people to find out the abuses that are taking place against them.
International pressure has been intensifying on Pyongyang since the release of a UN report last year documenting a network of political prisons in North Korea holding 120,000 people and a list of atrocities that include murder, enslavement, torture, imprisonment, and rape. The UN General Assembly overwhelmingly passed a resolution to refer Pyongyang to the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity, but the process was stalled in the UN Security Council. It has not been brought to a vote there because it is believed that North Korea's allies China and Russia would veto any punitive action. Investigators working in the UN Human Rights Field Office in Seoul will document further atrocities and cases of abuse inside the North for possible legal action in the future. Human Rights Watch's Robertson says North Korean officials at the UN initially offered to cooperate in exchange for immunity.
They also insisted that certain things get granted as concessions up front to North Korea, that there be no reference to any sort of leadership accountability. And, you know, the international community and human rights systems don't work that way.
Since then, North Korea has responded to human rights criticisms with strong denials, threats of retaliation, and further isolation. This week, Pyongyang said it would boycott next month's World University Games in South Korea to protest the opening of the UN Human Rights Office in Seoul. Choi Young-sung with the Network for North Korean Democracy and Human Rights says it is important to clarify that the UN office in Seoul is looking into abuses by the leadership and is not targeting the people of North Korea.
UN 인권사무소 설치에 따른
Choi says the purpose of the activities of the office is to observe Kim Jong-un and other top members who suppress North Koreans' human rights. They should know, he says, that the activities of the office are not to suppress or isolate North Koreans. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry recently said North Korea has also alienated its allies Russia and China by rejecting overtures to restart talks to end Pyongyang's nuclear program in exchange for increased aid and development assistance. In 2013, the United Nations imposed harsh sanctions on the regime after North Korea conducted its third nuclear test. International food aid, especially from South Korea and the United States, has also been drastically cut. At the same time, the UN is trying to pressure the Kim Jong-un regime to curb human rights abuses. The UN World Food Program is appealing for over $100 million in food aid for North Korea. The North is suffering through a severe drought that could cause significant food shortages for millions of Koreans. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Well, speaking of jazz, one of the most distinct forms of American music is Dixieland jazz. Its home is along the southern U.S. Gulf Coast, specifically in New Orleans, Louisiana. International Edition's Steve Norman tells us about music lovers celebrating Dixieland jazz along with many other popular musicians and groups.
It's the time of the year when communities all over the world hold jazz festivals, and that's what's been happening in the U.S. city of New Orleans, Louisiana, where what's called Dixieland jazz got its origin. You always hear a lot of Dixieland in New Orleans, where there is something for everyone who loves live music. That's right, it's Chicago, the rock band from the 1970s and 80s. Groups from almost all genres somehow or another make their way to New Orleans for the festival. To the New Orleans scene is country and bluegrass band Allison Krauss and Union Station.
Thank you.
let's finish up with some traditional New Orleans jazz from Tuba Skinny.
Could spend a lot more time listening to Dixieland jazz, but our time is up. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
An alliance of political separatists has signed a groundbreaking peace deal with the government of Mali, a hopeful step towards ending decades of fighting in the troubled West African nation. The Algerian brokered agreement, signed by a representative of the Rebel Coordination of Movements of Azawad, will grant greater autonomy to sparsely populated and restive northern Mali, a bid to end a cycle of uprisings there since the nation gained its independence from France in 1960. The Algiers Accord had been signed in May by a coalition of loyalist armed groups, but the CMA held out for concessions on the return of refugees, security arrangements, and development plans for the region. These were agreed with the government this month. Separatists have rebelled four times since independence. In 2012, they formed an alliance with Islamist militants to seize the desert north. A French-led military intervention scattered the insurgents, although isolated, sporadic attacks have continued. The deal will leave the issue of Azawad's political identity for a national debate between Malian parties. The government has said it is prepared to devolve more authority under Mali's existing decentralized structure, but rejects demands for full autonomy within a federal system. In signing the agreement, the CMA said it is placing hope for a fair settlement with the government. The United States congratulates the Malian people, including the parties to the peace negotiations undertaken in Algiers, for the full signature of the Accord for Peace and Reconciliation in Mali, achieved June 21st in Bamako. We commend the parties for their commitment to compromise and to resolving their differences through dialogue. We wish to thank the Algerian government for serving as lead mediator throughout the negotiations and underscore our continuing support for international peacekeepers there as we enter the implementation phase of the peace process. We will continue to stand by the Malian people as they take the lead in implementing the accord and bringing about the future of peace and prosperity that all Malians deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.